WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew. Imagine if you got this letter. Dear owner, we have recently seen you walking your pets out on the property, and you are in violation of the rules and regulations set forth. Rules and Regulations, Book 16, Pets, Part B, clearly states, pets must be under control when outside the unit. Control is deemed to mean on a leash, not to exceed 4 feet long, or carried. Your leashes are over 4 feet long, therefore violates this rule. You or someone else could trip and hurt themselves. Please take swift actions to resolve this matter by August 24th. We thank you in advance for your prompt attention to this matter. Ladies and gentlemen, the person who got that letter is Kent Nauman of Florida. Kent has two little dogs that he takes for a walk on a longer leash. And this apparently has upset the board members, who seem to have nothing better to do than to decide just how long your pet leashes can be. Kent, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
If you walked your dogs, okay, let's set the stage a little bit. You are an amputee.
Yes, my right leg was amputated above the knee.
And so if you walked your dogs on a 4-foot leash, you would fall.
I used to fall a lot. My current leg has a computerized knee, but it used to be both painful to walk, and the knee itself was unstable, so I would suddenly collapse a lot.
So basically, if you were to comply with this absolutely ridiculous rule, it would be putting yourself in harm.
It would be putting the dogs in harm. Also, I believe it would be in violation of the Florida statute on animal cruelty. They never addressed that issue.
That kind of makes sense, because it's not really fair to have a dog walking around on that short a leash. It doesn't really get that much exercise.
Yes, if you go to common grocery stores or to the common big chain department stores and look at their dog leash sections, you'll find that for the small dogs, the leashes start at 5 feet. They do have stout dog leashes for German Shepherds or whatever that are 4 feet.
A German Shepherd is a bigger dog, and
yeah,
therefore the leash would be a lot closer to you. But what kind of person would sit there and decide how long your pet leashes should be?
I think that it was deliberately to harass me. An ex-president told me that, in his opinion, that rule had been passed to deliberately bother me with, and that was actually the second dog leash suit. After the traumatic amputation of my leg, I couldn't walk around very much. I had to learn to walk again, and I was falling around all over the circle that we have as I was walking around, and I would leave my dogs, plural, on a leash behind my unit. Sometimes I would be laying on the couch inside, because I also have a 12-by-15-inch sheet of plastic in my abdominal wall.
Wow.
One intensive care nurse told me that particular piece of surgery had about a 90% mortality in her experience, and I was not feeling good. And my president and vice president came by one Sunday when my dogs were on a leash outside my unit, Saturday, and I was there with them, and it was right in the middle of the day, and they started arguing vigorously with me and told me to go inside with the dogs and stay there and close and shut the windows. And they later sued me exactly for that, for leaving my dogs on a leash outside my unit. They didn't use the word alone or the word unattended, simply leaving them outside the unit, and also for the dogs barking. They didn't say too much, they just said barking, and they sued me for that, and that was basically what they wanted, was an order forcing me to stay inside the unit with the doors and windows closed. which would have converted my place into a tomb, and they lost.
Now, this has been going on for about 6 years.
Yes.
So for 6 years, you've been battling the association. Just because you have two little dogs that you want to take out on a walk, and you're saying that this is a personal vendetta against you.
Yes. I was a board secretary for 1 year, and every time I've gotten sued or harassed, we've had the same president. And that first lawsuit, the association sued me without a board motion, and they sued me because Anonymous was complaining. So I got sued by Anonymous because of Anonymous complaints, and I used to ask who Anonymous was, and I was told that there was too much animosity, and I never was formally told where the animosity was coming from. I think it was from the president.
So wait a minute. You were sued because someone who remains nameless complained.
Yes. And the suit itself was transferred to the lawyers without a formal board motion by someone else whose name was never told me, even though I've asked.
Isn't there something in the U.S. Constitution someplace that says that you have a right to
confront your accusers?
Yes,
and that's true in arbitration law, too, and they didn't win.
So you went to arbitration. They took you to arbitration initially.
Initially, and I later turns out that I'd won the case. I didn't know it at the time by filing a motion for dismissal, and the case was written in such a manner that it sounded like, to me, like I'd lost, and then I appealed it to state circuit court and got it dismissed there, and then when I finally ended up in an ACLU lawyer's office, he read it and laughed and said, actually, you'd won the first time because if they didn't get what they were suing for, you didn't win. But the arbitrator wrote it, so it sounded to me like I'd lost, even though he didn't give them what they wanted.
Well, basically, from what I mean, you sent me a bunch of stuff here, and I appreciate that. I sat there and read it. I think what the arbitrator said was the rules were not unreasonable, which just boggles my mind, that someone would decide that a group of grown men and women sitting around measuring dog leashes is reasonable. That just totally boggles my mind. But you won because they weren't enforcing that rule uniformly, that they were discriminating against you. Am I correct?
Yes and no. That was the formal thing that he put down. I talked to both the association's lawyer and the arbitrator about it and explained to them that there was no case law. No one's ever contradicted me on dog leashes. And I explained to them in detail why.
I wonder why not. Why don't we have all these dog cases out there, hey?
For the fundamental issue is control.
Take the case
of the press canarios in California that killed a woman. They were almost undoubtedly on a 4-foot dog leash, and if you rule that that is deemed under control, they have a defense when their dog killed somebody. And I saw a press canario on the news in California, and they had two strong animal control officers holding this dog, and they were using 4-foot wooden poles instead of flimsy leashes around the neck. And in my judgment, they just barely had this dog under control after it had killed somebody with two strong men and these wooden poles instead of leashes. They were showing how vicious this dog was. And on the other hand, you have, a giant that's maybe 8 feet tall, and he happens to own a Chihuahua. If you have a 4-foot dog leash, his dog is going to be strangled. So that's basically why it's too variable a situation for the length of the dog leash, and I explained this to the arbitrator and told him that there should not be any, there not only wasn't any case law, but there shouldn't be any.
So basically what you're saying, if I understand you, Kent, is that the rule is in fact unreasonable?
Yes.
And has that ever been addressed by anyone other than you? I mean, you've made a very clear, in my opinion, made an extremely clear case for this rule being totally unreasonable. But did the arbitrators or the judges or anybody else address that fact? I mean, this should be thrown out. To me, this is petty and stupid.
They did throw it out. But he did.
The rule ought to be thrown out.
Okay. Another thing that wasn't mentioned in that case that I told the arbitrator
is
in Florida, under Florida Statute 718, the condominium statute, it says to change a rule, you have to go through a particular procedure. One of those things is you have to keep in the office an affidavit of notice of rules change meeting. My association has never done that, and as far as I know, the only rule book that's valid is the one that was filed with the clerk of the court in the public records in the very beginning, because they don't have any notice of rules change affidavits for anybody. That's simply another argument that, you know, I could have appealed up to the court even if they would have convicted me. But they cannot allow, in the law, any rulings on the lengths of dog leashes. And I don't think the judges or the arbitrators are going to allow it one way or the other. It's an area of the law that needs to be left blank, and that's one of the reasons why the arbitrator just picked on one little dog who's now deceased, who'd spent about 17 years of his life running around free on the property, is because it made the decision easy to write and also to keep from forming any case law on the length of dog leashes.
Okay, this was in arbitration, and the dog you're talking about was your neighbor's dog, the elderly lady. Is that the one?
She's since gone to a nursing home, and literally about a week or two ago, her daughter had the dog put to sleep at about 17 years, which is about the maximum length for a dachshund.
And this, and based on the fact that she allowed her dog to run around, and was not, this rule was not enforced against her, and based on that fact, they found that it was an arbitrary enforcement. So the arbitrator chucked it out.
Yes. Also,
Kent, before we move on a whole lot, I know that you've had a whole lot of problems with the association. We're going to get into that in just a minute. But I want to stick with the arbitration, and this was done, what year did you go to arbitration? 2006?
Yes.
Okay. In this, it says that at the start of the hearing, the respondent, which was you, indicated that none of the witnesses he intended to call would appear because they feared for their safety. The undersigned informed the respondent that it was his responsibility to subpoena any witnesses who may be unwilling to appear at the final hearing well in advance of the final hearing. You had people who were willing to come and speak for you, but they were too scared. What's that all about?
Well, one of them was a lady who I'm the president of our association, and her husband has a lifetime restraining order against. Even though this lady was once a president of the association herself, they testified that this lady was in danger of hitting them, which I think she was in danger of hitting them with legal fees, not with her fist.
How big was she, Kent?
How big was she? I mean, but they were using like a play on the words, you know, that yes, they were in danger of being hit, but not with a fist. It was with legal fees.
Oh, and she was afraid of showing up.
There's an injunction against her showing up ever in the office. One of my other witnesses was the man who took me to the ACLU lawyer to have the case filed, because he'd gone to the ACLU lawyer because his rights were violated, and he was intimidated his own front door by these people. The president showed up with the manager because he'd written a letter and circulated it to the entire 296 owners, and had the manager, who appears to have been in military for a while, pounding on his door. And generally, he felt extremely threatened and intimidated also, so his immediate reaction was to go to the ACLU lawyer, and the ACLU lawyer wrote a couple of letters and solved his problem. Among other things, the president had her attorney write a letter to this man and to another ex-president telling them that he forbid them even to mention the president's name, which the ACLU lawyer took care of that one with just one letter, because that's an illegal suppression of free speech, and the other lawyer sort of dropped out of sight after that one.
Don't you just love condo living?
Yeah. But anyway.
You know, Kent, I've been doing this for 20 years.
Okay.
I've heard so many idiotic things, and it just boggles my mind that we just keep doing it, and that these people do this with a straight face, and they take themselves so damn seriously. I don't take them seriously. Anybody who would do that was ridiculous. But anyway, so let's carry on, because we're going to run out of time here pretty soon. But
okay.
You then ended up filing a discrimination complaint through HUD, right?
It was an ACLU lawyer by the name of Derek Brett who filed the lawsuit with the Florida Commission on Human Relations under the Florida Fair Housing Act.
Okay.
And when he got the case through the probable cause hearing, and it came back in my favor, he told me I had three choices, and the first on the list was changing to the Attorney General of the state of Florida, and he says, if you want to make a civil rights statement, that's the way to go. So I thought, oh boy,
Sounds like a plan.
To the Attorney General. Yeah,
they're
not known for bringing in big monetary judgments. They're known for what I would like, which is putting people in jail, which I think those people deserve some jail time. You can't get that under the Florida Fair Housing Act, but under the federal one you can. So I'm still hopeful.
I think that the federal one would apply as well. I don't know how that's going to work. But if they're violating your federal fair housing laws, we used that some time ago, and the attorney representing the association was very belligerent, and he managed to get it kicked out. Now, it hadn't gone to the attorney general's office. It was at a local county level, and he hounded and harassed and abused them, and they dropped the case. So then he started going after the homeowner again. And at that point, we filed a complaint that they were harassing. So there's two prongs to this. And what I found fascinating was nobody would take the case against the attorney. They all said, "Oh, he'll lose his license and he won't be able to to practice law anymore." And gee whiz, wouldn't that be so terrible if that happened? So I'm glad, because I think that it's a little bit harder to intimidate and harass the attorney general. So I'm glad in your case that it's gone. It's not at the local level, which is good.
Yeah.
One of the other things, and I do not want to go into them on the air because, but you've had other medical problems as well. It's not just your physical disabilities. Yet the association found out about that, and they've been harassing you, and you had to provide them with all kinds of medical history. Is that?
No, I didn't provide the association with all sorts of medical history. I told them what the state of Florida had published, which I told you I believe it was in its own way incorrect, which was that I was convicted of schizophrenia, basically because I was engaging in some political activity in Tallahassee. And the association was using that against me. They were deliberately using psychiatric theory against me. One of the board members was at that time a long-term employee in the psychiatric department of the local hospital, and they were deliberately using psychiatric theory against me.
So anybody who engages in political activity is a schizophrenic? Is that what they're saying?
No. In my case, I was a physician, and I wrote a petition in October of 89 when Governor Martinez was holding a special session of the state legislature, and my petition was against abortion which is what the special session was about, and also against needless surgery, malpractice. And I think my petition eventually resulted in the Florida state constitutional amendment known as three strikes and you're out for doctors. So it's quieted the malpractice situation down in Florida. The Board of Medicine did not like it, so they had me investigated, and I read the Bible to them. And on a theoretical basis, the Bible, reading in it or believing in God, is an insane delusion. The reason why is because there is no place for the spirit world in psychiatric theory. The same thing is true of science. Mental health is a clinical science, and the requirement of science is you have to explain everything in terms of the physical world. So if you go to the movie by Cecil B. DeMille of Moses talking to an inanimate object called a burning bush, the only scientific or mental health conclusion you can come to is that Moses was a mega schizophrenic, which is an extreme blasphemy of both the Jewish and Christian religions.
So basically, I mean, what an undignified way of having to live, having all of that stuff being brought up by the association. I think they have way too much power. I think they're allowed to go to extremes, and I think that that needs to stop. But let's move on from there, Kent.
Okay.
You also had on your, you were growing some roses, or you had some plants in pots that you were growing?
Yes. They actually did this at least three times before they got the second tier to the lawsuit. I'd planted some roses. I'd started a rose garden behind my place because there was an 85-year-old Italian lady who was basically dumped in a unit behind mine by her family, and she was distraught and everything, and the roses calmed her down. And I planted some roses, and the condominium association, meaning the new manager when he came on, suddenly came and destroyed part of my garden and took two of the rose bushes and planted them by the guest house. He then wouldn't give them back. And then later...
Your rose bushes?
Well, and it's called conversion because they were on condominium property, even though under condominium case law, they technically remain my property. As far as the sheriff is concerned, he controls the entire outside property, so it's not a theft case. It's called conversion, which is basically the civil form of theft.
I was going to say, what's the difference?
That's it.
A rose by any other name, right?
Right. Okay, that was the first time. The next time, I'd had pots outside the house for years, and I actually have photographs because I'd purchased a camera to start documenting stuff, and I have chemical photographic pictures with a development stamp on the back with pots there for over a year before they finally came and took some pots. They just sort of did it suddenly. They had rose starts and they in them that I was growing from
cuttings,
and they came and took the pots. And then when I asked for them back, refused. And then I asked again, and the manager told me he'd given the pots away to somebody else, and that was final.
Wow.
And he wouldn't knew they were mine. And then when my lawyer filed this, went to the board of directors meeting after filing the initial complaint to settle with them for $20,000, they didn't settle with him. Instead, they sent the manager to take a couple of statues that had been in front of my place for many years, and they still have those statues. They've damaged one of them severely. And he filed the second tier of the lawsuit, which was for conversion, theft, or whatever, retaliatory harassment. They responded not by giving the statuary back and reprimanding the manager, but rather when he offered to settle with them for $12,000 instead of $20,000, they, as far as I could tell, they ignored him. And they gave the manager a raise. And then they continued to refuse to settle. And then when the probable cause came back in my favor, they refused settlement's offer, which at that time I was offering $30,000, and they get off the board permanently and the manager resigns, you know, just change all the people. And they refused that, and instead they came with a miniature bulldozer called a Bobcat.
Yeah.
And removed about $1,000 worth of palm trees that I'd planted about 13 years before and had grown up to be big sizes. I'd purchased them in 3-gallon pots, and two of them had grown up to plants that would sell for about $400 each.
And they just destroyed this.
And they moved them up to the front, and then they just kept clipping in a shadier area, which, and palm trees are full sun plants, and just kept chopping off the fronds as the plants tried to adjust themselves to the light level in the new home. They took them in like a negative energy spiral and killed them.
And this sounds like it's all just personal harassment.
Yes. The board of directors, I used to attend meetings regularly, promised me that until I left, I would be having involved in one lawsuit after another lawsuit after another lawsuit. And they did 2 dog leash lawsuits, and they were coming in for a third one. And I thought the manager was about ready to physically attack me, in spite of me having won 2 lawsuits. And the ACLU lawyer filed that complaint, and at least then there was no longer this, or there wasn't as much hostility and hatred. I stay away from those people. You know, I keep my distance and make sure they keep their distance. But I no longer get the feeling that there's imminent danger of me being physically attacked.
Well, they went as far as to sort of talk about you in the newsletter, and this I think is interesting. The next, you know, they talk about the arbitration, and this is a 2006 newsletter, and they say that they're currently in arbitration with an owner who's walking his dogs on a 24-foot leash and refuses to obey the rules regarding pets. You know, and it goes on and on and on. But anyway, it says the person continues to walk around the property spreading untruths about the situation. The next time you see him, please ask him to follow the rules like everyone else and stop putting the association in jeopardy. My God, Kent, what on earth is that?
Okay, there was no in jeopardy to the association. They're not legally responsible for my dog leashes. The most common dog leash on this property is the same with the rest of the nation. It's one of those elastic leashes in the plastic roller box. And there was a lady right across the parking lot from me that had 3 Jack Russells, which she had on these elastic leashes. And they used to go. She used to just take them right out her front door to defecate. And she told me the manager had seen her a bunch of times. We have a rule that says only 2 pets, and they were on these leashes longer than 4 feet, and they ignored all this activity. Matter of fact, there was 3 of them: the president, the manager, and the a former secretary that had all swore under oath that they'd seen maybe only 1 other person use a dog leash of longer than 4 feet. And that particular board secretary who lives on the property happens to use a 5-foot leash, and she swore that only 1 other person she'd seen it use a 4-foot leash, longer than 4.
I think there's something wrong with people who go around measuring leashes. I mean, I'm sorry. I just think that that's petty beyond belief.
It was discriminatory.
Well, and you know, and the article goes on to say that it was a selective enforcement, even though the association's attorney didn't see it that way. Well, gee whiz, I wonder why. Surprise, surprise, you know, these association attorneys wouldn't make all the money if they weren't, you know, if it was discriminatory, if they saw it as being discriminatory. Kent, thank you so much. Good luck.
I'm sure
that you know, you're going to win this case, because I cannot imagine adults sitting there looking at all the facts in this case and looking at what you've been through for the last 6 years and not see it as discriminatory and abusive and just outrageous. And, you know, it underscores the need for some desperately needed adult supervision in associations. But we'll keep in touch.
Thank you.
And we'll, you know, follow up and see how you do with that. So good luck. Know that we're pulling for you.
Thank you.
Today we're joined by Jean Winters. Jean is an attorney in Florida, and Jean just recently got her license after a long career as an electrical engineer, and she is one of the very few attorneys out there who actually represents homeowners as opposed to just making sure that associations end up with more and more power all the time. Jean, thank you so much for stepping in and doing the show today.
Thank you, Shu. It's nice to be with you.
I met Jean when they had the conference in Florida, so I'm really excited to have her quite often. I don't know the people who are on the air with me, but Jean's a special lady. So, Jean, thank you. Jean, what's going on in Florida? There was an article that just came out saying that boards need to have more power, and they don't have enough tools in their arsenal of tools to enforce the rules and collect assessments. Do you agree with that assessment?
No, I don't. My experience with associations is that there are more than enough tools. The problem that I've seen and my law partner has seen is that there isn't enough of an understanding of how to apply the tools that exist. And certainly we are in the middle of a foreclosure crisis that's happening all over the country, and associations are being hit with this. Now, the association has every tool needed to lien, to record a claim of lien and foreclose on that lien. The only limitation to an association in trying to collect past due assessments is the mortgages, the mortgage companies, who very often, if a homeowner is late on their assessments, they're also not paying the bank. So the bank will foreclose. And because the bank has priority, its lien has priority, or its mortgage has priority, the associations are often left with no way to collect assessments, and that has become a problem. But as far as individual homeowners, the associations already have the ability to file, to record a lien, claim of lien against a property. It's a judicial process, foreclosure process. They have that ability. The issue that I've seen as far as the use of these tools, very often, because there are, especially in today's economy, there are bank foreclosures, sometimes it may not even be economically practical for an association to record a claim of lien. Well, if not, they should perhaps record a claim of lien, but to proceed on foreclosure. And I've seen too many instances where associations pay for foreclosures when it doesn't make practical sense. There's less equity in the home than they could possibly get through foreclosure, and the associations end up spending more money on attorney's fees than they can ever collect. That's not an issue of statute. That's an issue of boards making business decisions as to how they want to proceed. So that's one issue. And the other issue that I have seen is, and I know that there are some attorneys who disagree with me on this, but the issue of fines. Florida statutes allow an association to levy a fine within reason. And the association gives boards the authority to do that if it's in their governing documents. And boards are entitled to levy a fine if that provision is in their documents, up to a reasonable amount. And boards can then collect on that fine, just like anyone else would collect on a debt owed. And the reason the legislature stepped in and took away the ability to lien and foreclose based on fines is because too often, they are, that tool is used arbitrarily by boards that don't necessarily understand what their rights and responsibilities are. And I think the one single way that associations could benefit would be to for every homeowner to get involved and find out what's going on in their association, and for boards to take the time to read their own covenants and read the statutes.
Jean, I want to go back to something you said. You're talking about fines, and that's a passionate subject for me, because there are two, and I don't know if you're aware of these, there are two cases, one in Virginia and one in Rhode Island, that have found fining to be unconstitutional. In Virginia, it's the actual act of fining, and in Rhode Island, it's the statute enabling associations to fine to be an unconstitutional delegation of a police power. So I don't think, personally, don't think that associations, neighbors should be fining neighbors. I think that just causes all kinds of turmoil and bad blood and just sheer unhappiness in an association.
I actually agree with that. I think there are other, and I didn't get into this, but there are other ways to make sure that properties are well cared for, and one of those ways is injunctive power, and a board has the authority to file an action in court and ask for an injunction, which is what's known as an equitable relief, to get a court order to require a homeowner to keep up their property. One question, you know, the associations are not public. They're considered private corporations. They're structured as corporations, and because of that, they're not subject to the Constitution, except what may be statutorily provided. And it becomes a problem, because either these are governments or they're not. They're really considered quasi-governmental bodies. Boards and associations are these corporations, and the problem there is they too often don't want or don't understand their roles, and they're not subject to the kind of protections that we have in a, quote, real government, but they have many of the powers of a real government. And
greater powers.
Yes, and I don't see that you should, you know, that's not, in my opinion, a viable solution. Either they are treated as governments or they are not. But that's a much bigger philosophical issue, and I don't see the structure of associations going away anytime soon. I do agree with you that fining is not necessarily a good idea, and it is typically a police power, a governmental function, and when I say police power, I mean a governmental function, and I don't believe that that power in the hands of homeowners is beneficial. Mm-hmm. And another thing that I would like to add is, why are fines levied in the first place? Because, according to boards, someone hasn't followed a covenant or complied with a covenant. Who interprets the covenant? How many times have we seen boards who haven't read the covenants but believe they know what's good for the community? I would encourage board members to read their covenants and then consider what is really going to improve the value of our community, of our homes. Is you can spend tens of thousands of dollars suing your neighbor over the color of flowers, for example, that has absolutely no bearing on the value of your property.
Jean, during the first half of this show, we talked to Kent Nauman of Florida again, and Kent has been in a battle with his association for 6 years over the length of dog leashes that is allowed on the properties. Can you imagine grown people sitting there deciding how long a dog leash can be and then deciding to enforce and fine people for violating that law? that rule. It's not even, it doesn't make, you know, a lot of what these people do are so petty. You end up with people who've had no authority in their lives, all of a sudden at the helm of, in some cases, a multi-million dollar corporation with absolutely no adult supervision anywhere. And you end up making life totally miserable for people over stupid things like dog leash lengths.
Well, unfortunately, I can understand it because I've seen similar situations where seemingly ridiculous matters. Now, I suspect if you talk to a board member of that association, they'll tell you all the reasons why that rule is in place. And I would wonder, is it a covenant? Is it a board enacted rule?
It's a rule.
It's a rule, and is that it's a homeowners association, and it's in Florida.
Right.
Is that condo. Rule was that is the board's authority authorized by the covenant?
I don't know. I know most covenants give boards the right to adopt rules pertaining to the use of the common area, and I guess in a greater sense, if you're going to walk your dog on the common area, then it's the use of the common area. But again,
well,
we're getting
first of all, Florida law does not give unfettered discretion to boards to make up rules. In fact, there is a recent statute that was enacted because of some of these kinds of issues. I can't address this particular issue without knowing more, but the board's authority to enact rules is limited, and it's limited to case law in the courts have long held in Florida that rules have to be reasonable, and they have to be not arbitrary, but evenly enforced. And what's reasonable? And, you know, it is a matter that often comes before the courts. And recently, the statute codified some of this case law and further explained that boards are limited to the extent that the authority granted them to make rules must be either expressly stated in the covenants or reasonably implied. And sometimes I see boards that, again, that don't understand, even well-meaning people, believe they know what's good for the community and sometimes make up rules that they really don't have the authority under the law to make up. But the problem there is how many homeowners know what authority they have.
Well, here's what happened in this case. It ended up going to arbitration a number of years ago. The homeowner won that case. What happened was he was going to call witnesses, and the witnesses were too scared of showing up because they feared retaliation from the association if they dared show up and sort of bear out his claims.
That's one of the reasons. You hit the nail on the head. That is one of the reasons why the legislature put some limits on fines, for example, because too often you had situations where someone, and I'm not saying all board members do this, of course they don't, but there are times that personalities get involved, people don't understand their authority under the law and may target an individual that they don't like. And that person is, to a large degree, at the mercy of a board that has more resources and more power under the law than individual homeowners. And to defend, even if you're in the right, even if a homeowner is in the right, to defend a lawsuit, for example, is very expensive and draining, and I would say more often than not, there's no real clear understanding. There's no understanding at all why or how the rule that is being enforced is of benefit to the community.
Well, so a lot of them don't make sense. So many are plain petty.
Well, let me give you another example. Because associations are private corporations, And they're not subject to some of the same constitutional constraints that a government would be. Sometimes even the covenants themselves have rules that, well, often they were written many, many years ago. Some have never been updated. Some may or may not even be consistent with state law. And
do
many...
Do they have to be?
Well, they may, no, but
if it's part of a contract, Jane, if it's part of a contract, I mean, I live in an older association. It's about 40 years old. And back in those days, they really didn't have that kind of power, the powers that they have today that they've been granted by the legislature. The legislature is enabling. It says if your governing documents say you this, that, and the other, you may do it. We have industry attorneys who constantly want to update our governing documents. Oh, you're not in compliance with the law. We don't have to be in compliance with the law.
Well, actually, yes, you do.
The law is the law.
If the statute, and the, you know, we could argue about this, the legal issue at length, but the statutes, for example, limit the amount of a late fee that can be charged when a homeowner is late on an assessment. There was an association, I represented a homeowner recently that lived in an association that only, a homeowner's association that had a very small annual assessment. There wasn't much common property. There really was very little. It was maybe $350, $375 a year. And a homeowner was late on the assessment, and the homeowner paid it late and paid the interest that the board members charged. And I might add, the board members charged what they said was 8%, but it was actually 19%, so they didn't know how to calculate interest. And 19% is, as a matter of law, usurious and not legal. And no, they can't charge that. But they did, and he paid it. He objected to the late fee of $150. And the attorney recorded a lien against his property for $150. Now, I represented the homeowner, and the lien was ultimately released. But that, an attorney has no business doing that. That is contrary to law. And he was claiming first that I didn't know how to read the statute, which clearly was not the case, but secondly, well, they released the lien because he knew better, in my opinion, but also he was claiming it may be unconstitutional as applied to this association. In other words, there was a provision that allowed the board to charge whatever it wanted for late fees.
Well, the law would, I mean, if the law says that you may not charge more than and places a limit, then the law would prevail.
Correct.
Over the association.
That's correct.
You don't have to amend the documents.
You don't. You do not need to. But what happens, and in some cases it may not be worth it to amend them, but they, board members need to understand that if there are conflicting provisions, they may not be enforceable.
Right.
And that's the issue. And I was about to say earlier, and I would like to mention this, as far as some of the covenants, the language in covenants, very often there is something to the effect that a homeowner is prohibited from conduct that is immoral. How do you enforce that? Who determines what moral is?
I know.
And this is the kind of provision that begs for problems.
Oh, I agree with you.
There, you know, 50, 60 years ago, and it's classic in law schools when students begin to learn constitutional law about things, how sometimes ordinances and laws passed have been challenged, and they've been challenged because they're overbroad or because they're too vague. And a person needs to understand what the law is. The law needs to be clear enough that an average person can understand what conduct is prohibited. There was a city ordinance, I believe, that many, many years ago that said something to the effect of a person using a city sidewalk could not say things offensive to passersby. Well, that ordinance was struck down as unconstitutional decades ago.
Yeah.
But that same language could be used, and actually is, in covenants. And who decides what is offensive? Who decides what is moral?
Now I agree with you. My fear, Jean, is that once you open the door and you've got the CAI attorneys who are going to be more than willing to rewrite all of the governing documents, you will end up losing, or we will end up losing, a lot more rights that we already have now by allowing them to...
Yes, and I have seen there has been some statutory changes in recent years in Florida, and one of the reasons for those changes is because of the many, many problems there have been. And associations have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars litigating cases that never should have been brought. And attorneys, and the only... I don't want to speak ill of my peers, but sometimes the only persons that benefit from this litigation are the attorneys, who are paid regardless of whether the association wins or loses.
Right.
And how in this economy does it make sense to spend tens of thousands of dollars forcing someone to, close their shutters for 3 weeks? Or planting a different color of roses. I'm pulling things out of my hat, but these are because they were a quote nuisance. And what I have seen some attorneys do in amending the documents, and I have seen this, is draft an amendment, and I'll give you an example. An amendment says that if a covenant is being violated by a homeowner, the board may go seek legal counsel and charge those attorney's fees to the homeowner. Then the homeowner, then those fees, attorney's fees that are charged to the homeowner, then become a special assessment. And the special assessment is...
Aline. And foreclosure.
Collectible as any other assessment, which means lien and foreclosure. Now, I personally do not believe that that kind of provision is even legal. I think it is a blatant attempt to circumvent Florida statutes about liens, because the statutes require a modicum of, whether you agree with fines or not, at least the statute provides some protection for a homeowner that we would know in a normal government is called due process. It requires there to be a hearing. It requires it requires a board to allow a homeowner to be heard. That isn't true with these kinds of amendments. I have a homeowner that came to me who is having a dispute with his neighbor, who is friends of a board member, and I won't go into all the details, but there is, in my opinion, he has had death threats, and one board member has the ear of the attorney and went to the attorney and said, this homeowner is a nuisance. Really? Well, he's a nuisance because he parked on the grass. Okay. So the attorney then wrote a letter invoking this amendment that the attorney wrote and said, if you don't pay, this is becoming a special assessment and it is collectible as any other assessment. Therefore, they could, based on dubious, quote, evidence and a board member's dislike of this person who has lived in this is a condominium actually, lived there for 15 years, could lose his home because he has a dispute and a personality disagreement with a board member.
And you know what?
This is wrong.
Oh, I agree with you. We're out of time, Jean, but I just wanted to say that some of the CAI attorneys have bragged about having written themselves a recession-proof career. And I think what you're describing actually falls right in line with what they're claiming.
I would say so.
Jean, thank you so very much for joining us. You've got so much to give. I hope you'll come back, and I hope to do a full hour with you at some point.
Well, I'll be happy to. I would like to part with this one comment. There is a character called Blanche DuBois in A Streetcar Named Desire. It was a play. And Blanche DuBois was famous for saying, "I rely on the kindness of strangers." If you buy a home in an association and you don't get involved and don't pay attention to what's going on, that's what you're doing. You're relying on the kindness of strangers to protect your biggest investment.
Thank you for joining us today. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.